was Justin Ross Harris allegedly doing while his 22-month-old son, Cooper, suffered in the back of this scorching SUV?
He was having up to six different conversations with different women. The most common term would be sexting.
Stunning claims of raunchy text messages, suspicious internet searches, and a plan to kill his son.
Evidence is showing us right now that he's got this whole second life that he's living with alternate personalities and alternate personas.
Harris sat shackled and sullen as Detective Phil Stoddard with the Cobb County Police Department detailed X-rated messages allegedly exchanged the day Cooper died, including with a then 16-year-old girl.
Were photos being sent back and forth between these women and the defendant during this day while the child's out in the car?
Yes, there were photos of his exposed penis, erect penis being sent. There were also photos of women's breasts being sent back to him.
No visible reaction from the 33-year-old's wife, Leanna Harris, who sat with her family and supporters in the packed courtroom.
He was a loving father. He loved his son very much. We went on family vacations together, and he was a good dad.
But just 5 days before Cooper's death, Detective Stoddard says internet searches revealed that Harris watched videos online about the dangers of being trapped in a hot car, and that Harris visited a web forum devoted to the child-free lifestyle.
So there's no, you don't have any evidence that he actually typed in a Google search or a Reddit search or anything for child-free.
True.
We get so far afield from the events of June the 18th. This has got nothing to do with those events whatsoever. The status of his marriage and his fantasy life has got nothing to do with the events of June the 18th. We're just getting so far afield, Judge. This isn't relevant to anything.
The detective also testified the couple had financial problems and took out life insurance policies on Cooper.
They had two policies on Cooper. The first policy was a $2,000 policy through the Home Depot.
Now, the second one, was this something that they got back in 2013?
November 2012 is when he signed up for it.
And was it something that he still had at the time of the child's death?
That is correct.
And how much was the policy?
It was a $25,000 policy.
Stoddard laid out the strange way he saw Harris reacting the day Cooper died.
He started off trying to work himself up, and we're watching him on the camera as he's doing this, and he's walking around, and he's rubbing his eyes, and he's, it looked like he's trying to hyperventilate himself. No tears, no, real emotion coming out of him except for, the huffing.
And through the time you're talking with him about his son and his son's death, did you ever see any tears coming from him?
No.
Even more bizarre, how witnesses say Leanna Harris reacted at the daycare when she was told that Cooper was never dropped off.
And in front of several witnesses, all of a sudden she states, Ross must have left him in the car. And they're like, what? There's no other reason. Ross must have left him in the car. And they try to console her, and they're like, no, there's a thousand reasons. He could have taken him to lunch or something. We don't know yet. And she's like, no.
Welcome to True Crime Brewery. I'm Jill.
And I'm Dick. Good evening.
This is a 4th of July special.
That's right. It's going to come out on the 4th.
Yeah.
We're ready.
So happy Independence Day.
Our second one.
Yep. Now, on the morning of July 18th, 2014, Ross Harris was expected to bring his 22-month-old son, Cooper, to daycare on his way to work. Ross and Cooper ate breakfast at a Chick-fil-A restaurant less than 1 mile from Ross's house. After breakfast, Ross drove his SUV to the Home Depot office where he worked. Cooper was strapped in a rear-facing car seat in the back. Ross went into his office at 9:25 a.m., leaving Cooper in his car seat. At about 12:30, Ross got lunch with two co-workers at a nearby Publix. Then he purchased light bulbs from a nearby Home Depot store. When Ross returned to his office building, he opened his driver's side door and put the light bulbs into his front seat. He would claim later that he didn't notice Cooper was still in the car. So it was past 4 p.m. after Ross left work when he said that he discovered Cooper's lifeless body, and he stopped at a nearby shopping center and called for help. Witnesses and first responders found Ross's behavior to be strange, and suspicions started building right away. Ultimately, there was a secret life and a murder plot revealed by prosecutors. The cruelty of this crime by a father against his young son was unimaginable. So on this episode of True Crime Brewery, A Devil Down in Georgia, The Murder of Cooper Harris, Dick and I are discussing the sad and unthinkable death of Cooper Harris. What we find out about Ross Harris's secret life and motivations is a lesson in selfishness and callousness. Dick also shares with us his medical expertise on hyperthermia, the suffering endured by Cooper Harris, and the 30-plus accidental hot car deaths occurring each year in the United States. So before we head down to the quiet end for our discussion, let's get our beer review.
Okay. You ready?
I'm ready.
I have a beer called Cosmic Debris. The cosmic is spelled with a K.
Okay.
I'm not sure why. It's brewed by Creature Comforts Brewery in Athens, Georgia. So Cosmic Debris is a double IPA. So think of an IPA on steroids. These IPAs or double IPAs tend to be more robust, malty, and more alcoholic, and they have a very strong hop profile. So this particular one, Cosmic Debris, is hazy gold with a modest-sized head and just a smidge of sticky lace. Has a nice citrus aroma with a sweet malt background. Taste is even better. Tastes like orange marmalade.
Yummy. Well, that sounds good. So it's citrusy and hoppy.
Right.
Which are both very desirable in an IPA, right?
Very much so.
Yeah.
A little bit of tropical fruit, some caramel. It's got a big juicy feeling in the mouth. Nice beer.
All right. So it sounds like something that would be good to drink for 4th of July weekend.
It would be. That's why I picked it. It's a nice summer beer.
Okay. Well, I posted our July beers last week, so hopefully some people were able to pick it up, at least some people down in Georgia. I know it's not always easy.
It's certainly not widely distributed.
No.
So I had to pull a few strings to get this.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it. Well, let's open it up.
All right. Okay. Let's do it.
Okay. Are you ready to head down to the quiet end?
I am. I got the beer.
Okay.
You got the glasses?
I do.
All right. Let's go down.
Let's go.
It's a good crowd here today.
There really is. Yeah. It's a nice, beautiful weekend.
They've all been to the fireworks store.
Yes.
Because I see bags of fireworks. Which always makes me nervous because I think they're going to shoot their fingers off.
Yeah, I know. Well, you've been traumatized by your medical background.
Yeah, there's always some jerks that do that at home and lose pieces of an extremity.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm biased.
Yeah.
But it looks like people are ready for a good time on the 4th.
All right. And beer is always great on the 4th.
Yeah, beer and fireworks really go well together, don't they?
They kind of do, as long as you're careful, right? I was thinking more like drinking and watching them, not setting them up.
Yeah. So whoever's setting them off is not drinking.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking.
We hope.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay.
Here we are at the end, and I'm going to start off our conversation.
Okay.
So Ross Harris grew up in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and his close friend, Billy Kirkpatrick, describes Ross as a massive dork, a guy who approached strangers and who played his guitar on the beach.
Well, why does that make you a dork?
Well, because I think that he was very would go over and talk to people and say stupid things.
I mean, I think of a dork as somebody who's really socially inept.
Well, I think he was. I think he reached out socially, but he was inept in what he did with it.
Well, okay.
Anyway, that's what his friend said.
I mean, I like the fact that he would play his guitar on the beach and stuff.
Sure.
That doesn't sound terribly dorky.
No, I guess not. And it's really hard to get a lot of background on him, I found, but... We do know that he settled down and got his college degree after he met his wife, Liana, and they were married for 6 years when they moved to Atlanta. Now, Ross had taken a job as a web developer at Home Depot, and Cooper was born just a few months after they set up a home in Atlanta. So according to friends and family, Ross was a doting father who was proud of his healthy, beautiful baby boy. Liana and Ross's marriage wasn't perfect, but they did seem like a normal, happy family to most people.
Well, nobody really has a perfect marriage, right?
Just us.
Yeah, but we're still in the honeymoon phase.
Plus, we're older, so.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
I think that's it.
But I think there's always stresses in a marriage and things to work through.
And I think it's worse when you're young and starting out.
Oh, no question.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah. So Ross was the one who took Cooper to daycare most mornings, and Liana...
That was part of the routine.
Yes.
Russ took the baby to daycare.
most times.
And this is important, as we'll see when we talk about forgotten baby syndrome.
Okay.
All right. I'm just putting my two cents in.
That's what you're here for. So Leanna was the one who would pick him up after work. Now, Leanna arrived at the daycare on the 18th, as she always did. And when Cooper wasn't there, she called Ross on her cell phone to see if there was some kind of a mix-up. But Ross didn't answer. Leanna worried that maybe Ross had left Cooper at home.
Yeah, now, to me, that's kind of strange to jump to that conclusion.
Well, I think the more you hear about this, though, you're going to find out that she was kind of like the mother to both of them, and he was kind of like a big kid, it seems.
Okay.
So I think that she was the responsible one.
So she immediately thinks that, oh, geez, he forgot the baby at home.
Well, I think what she immediately thought, surprisingly enough, was that he left the baby in the car. But then she was hopeful that maybe he'd left the baby at home, which would be really scary, but it wouldn't be certain death like the car would be.
Well, I don't like either of those suppositions.
Well, I don't think she did either.
Okay.
But she did call a neighbor to check the apartment, and of course, Cooper wasn't at home. So then Leanna rushed over to Ross's office, and this is where a police officer found her. She was at the Home Depot office, and he told her the terrible news that Cooper had died after being left in a hot car for 7 hours. Now, the officer explained that Ross hadn't taken Cooper to daycare that day, but had left him in the car in his office parking lot. Now, there are a lot of things that were said about her reaction and her behavior at this point was unusual. She didn't seem hysterical like most of us mothers would be.
Right. And her behavior when she found her husband at the police department was even stranger.
That's an extension of that we'll get to, yes.
Yeah.
But at this point in the story, she's at the office, and if you look at the surveillance footage of her waiting at the Home Depot, she does seem calm. She's sipping on a drink.
Right.
She doesn't seem frantic, which is very strange.
It is.
Yeah.
Because we've already heard the concern that, well, my husband either left him at home or left him in a car.
Right.
You'd think she'd be more worried.
You would think so. And we can't say what was in her head, but she appeared. Her behavior seemed unusual.
Yeah.
So at this point, if we're worried that this baby's been in the car for over 7 hours, that is certain death. It was in the 80s that day outside, the temperature.
Right.
85 degrees Fahrenheit about.
85 to 90.
Okay. So he would have died from hyperthermia, which is overheating or heat stroke.
Right.
So I'm going to have you come in now and talk a little bit about what happens to the body.
All right.
And some facts about that for everybody.
I'll put my scientific hat on.
That'd be wonderful.
So heat stroke, this is something that occurs when the body's temperature is over 104 degrees. The symptoms of heat stroke include dizziness, disorientation, seizures, hot skin, rapid heart rate, and loss of consciousness. So this is when it's 104 or over. When the body's core temperature is over 107, the body shuts down and internal organs stop working. So if you get to that point, you're in big trouble.
Yes. So how long would it take for the car to get over that temperature?
In this closed car, the temperature would rise about 35 degrees in an hour and over 50 degrees in 2 hours. So it doesn't take long.
No.
So if the ambient temperature is 85 degrees, in within 2 hours, it's over 130 degrees.
Okay. So would it matter if the car temperature was only like 65 or 70 with the air conditioning on when he left him?
It will take a little longer.
Take a little longer.
But still.
Not a big difference.
Right.
And what if he'd left the window cracked open?
That has little or no effect.
Really?
Really.
Even if there's a little breeze?
Even if there's a little breeze.
Wow. Okay.
So most of these cases occur in children that are less than 2 years old. Well, yeah.
Because if you're over two, you're going to get up and pound on the window or
something. Right. You're going to do something.
Yeah.
So then they had some studies that looked at cases from 1998 to 2016.
Okay, so what's that, 18 years?
18 years.
Okay.
There's 700 cases described in the United States.
Wow, that's quite a few.
It is. And it peaked, and then it went down for a bit, and then it started coming up again. So the idea is that some education was helpful, but that it was stopped or discontinued, and people got lax again.
Really? So there was some kind of educational program online about take a second look in your back seat or something?
Right.
Yeah.
Put your purse or your cell phone or something in the back seat so you remember them.
That's smart. I didn't think of that.
The other thing that was a big factor was that with airbags, people didn't put their car seats in the front anymore.
Sure. And if you're in a van, your kid could be a couple feet away.
Right.
Which that wasn't the case here, though.
No. So in the 700 cases in the United States, and I don't have statistics to back all this up, but the statement was that 54% of these cases were children that were forgotten by the caretaker.
Okay, so what kind of studies were these?
Just retrospective studies.
Okay.
So looking back, I mean, it doesn't say anything other than this is what we found.
Sure.
So 54% were simply forgotten. 28% occurred with a child playing in an unattended vehicle. Now, I'm not sure how that happens.
Oh, I could see how that could happen if your little kid's outside with his older brother or something and goes in the car.
Yeah.
And gets stuck in there. It's just like if you have a refrigerator sitting in the yard. It's
yeah,
a hazard.
That's true.
You need to have your car locked and your keys out of reach. Of course, if they're under two, I would think you're watching them. But
right.
So exactly. there's a certain element of neglect there.
There is.
Yeah.
And 17%, this was interesting to me, and I looked for some verification of these numbers, but I couldn't find any. But 17% of the 700 cases was with the child intentionally left in the car.
Okay.
So this is kind of malice towards the child.
Intentionally left in the car could be you're going into shop and they're asleep and you're going to leave them there. Doesn't mean you wanted to kill them.
Well, yeah, but when you're doing that, you're in and out.
Well, you'd be surprised, though.
I know.
But I don't think in those cases they wanted to hurt the child. I think this is the first case where they actually proved malice.
Well, I don't know that they proved malice.
Well, they think they did. He's convicted.
He was.
Yeah.
And he's the first person that was convicted of this.
Yeah, there have been other people convicted of other things, right?
Right.
But we'll get to that when we talk about the forgotten child.
But this was the first one where they convicted him of murder.
Yes. Which is a terrible way to murder someone.
Well, yeah, just reading the description of what happens as your body temperature is rising.
Well, I mean, I'm sure, as you know, when a child has a fever, it's a similar thing, right?
Yeah.
If the fever gets to 107, you're in the danger zone.
Right. Yeah, we always tell people when the temperature is 104 and up, you ought to have the baby looked at.
Which kind of freaks parents out because they're worried at 101.
Well, yeah, it's all the fever phobia.
Well, I remember all the nights from you on call with the panicky calls about fevers, 100.1, mm-hmm. 99 point something. Parents worry about that.
People worry about fevers.
But they're not really dangerous until, what, 104, 103?
Well, even 104, they're not necessarily dangerous as long as you can get them down.
Yeah, but you might want to know what's causing it at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, usually when I'm on call and somebody calls up and says that their child has a temp of 104, 105, I'm going to say take them to the hospital and have them evaluated.
Well, Liana was taken then to the Cobb County Police Headquarters from the Home Depot office where the policeman had met her. And that's where Ross was already being interviewed. To police, Ross's story wasn't coming together. They didn't like it, right?
Right. They didn't like it from the start.
No. And in an interview room at the police department, Ross Harris was videotaped the entire time. Now, as he waited alone in the interview room, Ross intermittently wept and paced the room. And he would repeatedly say, oh God, why? And then he did this deep breathing, kind of almost like Lamaze breathing. And he did drink some water. And this video has been widely seen on TV shows and on YouTube of how he behaved. And it was strange. I don't know if it means he did anything.
No, but and maybe that's our own biases and thinking, how should a parent act?
Well, that's the danger I worry about.
When they find out that their child has died.
Right.
And I'm positive that everybody doesn't act the same.
Of course. Right.
But they were suspicious about how he was reacting
yes.
to the news of his child's death.
Right. And it was bizarre.
And so was his wife's.
To me, hers was even a little more concerning.
Yes.
But we'll get there.
Okay.
After about 15 minutes, detectives came in to interview Ross. And I've noticed in my research and in watching a lot of these interviews with detectives is that they will leave the room and leave them alone for a while and videotape what they do when they're not there.
Sure.
We've seen it time and again, Jody Arias.
Part of the technique.
Yeah, just to kind of get a feel for them. And I also think it will kind of make them nervous, build up their nerves a little more, you think?
Yeah, I think so.
Part of the technique, for sure. I don't fully understand why. So detectives went in to interview him, and by this time, Ross appeared pretty calm. He did ask for a trash can in case he needed to throw up, and he did seem somber to me, but he did make a couple little jokes, and he did make small talk with the police.
Right.
Now, according to his wife and his friends, that was his personality, his so-called dorky personality, is that he was socially awkward like that.
Okay.
So.
I'm not sure if that applies, but.
Well, neither am I, but according to them, I'm just giving you the facts. So he told detectives that the morning had been quite normal. Liana had left for work early, about 7:15 a.m. She was a dietitian, and this is about the time she usually left. And Ross left the apartment at 8:30. Now, he took Cooper to the Chick-fil-A for breakfast, and this was located within a mile of his office.
Just a short haul.
Yeah, I mean, very short.
A very easy way.
Yes. Now, after they ate, he said that he strapped Cooper into his car seat and gave him a little kiss. One thing he said that was a bit odd is he told police that he always kissed Cooper and told him that he loves him. That was part of his routine. He explained that he did this in case they were in an accident and he died, Cooper would have that memory of him.
Yeah, I'm not sure what to make of that.
It's a little weird.
That's kind of weird, you know?
It's a little weird, yeah. He said he forgot about Cooper and drove straight to work as if Cooper wasn't with him. He said he probably didn't hear him because he fell asleep very easily in the car. So I understand that completely, but that means he'd have to buckle him in and he'd have to be right to sleep after that.
Yeah, because it's a mile.
Yeah.
From the Chick-fil-A to his work.
Right, and he's not a newborn.
Nope.
So it's a little odd there, too. There's another kind of red flag, as we say.
To me, yeah. Russ told police about his day and about getting lunch at Publix.
So that's a grocery store down south.
Right. He didn't mention the light bulbs. He said he had plans to meet friends at the movies after work. And as he was driving toward the theater, he saw Cooper. Because, according to him, his wife was going to pick Cooper up. He took him to daycare, and his wife picked him up from daycare.
Yeah, that was the routine.
He's going to join friends for the movies because he doesn't have the baby in the car.
Yeah, they were going to see a 5 o'clock showing of, was it 22 Jump Street in 2014? I think so.
Probably.
It's a comedy, yeah. He was going to see it with two of his other computer geeky friends.
Yeah, well, it's an alleged comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not bad, but go ahead.
Okay. So as he's driving towards the theater, he saw Cooper motionless in the back in his car seat. He realized that Cooper was in the car and he lost it, pulled over to Cooper out of his car seat. Cooper wasn't moving or breathing. No pulse. Russ said he called the daycare to tell him to keep Liana there if she showed up, but the daycare didn't answer. No, why would you do that?
Well, his explanation was that if she showed up at the daycare and found out that the baby wasn't there, he'd want her to stay there and be picked up by police instead of going off in a panic somewhere else.
Sure. Okay.
Okay.
So he didn't call 911 because four people who were on the scene had already called 911.
Yeah, there were several people. This was a little, like, outdoor shopping center.
Yeah.
There was a Mexican restaurant called Cinco's, I think. A Subway, there were a few little places like that, and there were some guys working on lighting that came over. So there were quite a few witnesses who came over to help.
Right. So he called Liana's phone, his wife's phone, but a police officer answered, told him to get off the phone.
Yeah, I think the police officer didn't answer, but the police officer that had arrived where he was told him.
Get off of there.
Said get off the phone. Because he was acting strangely, and I guess they found him threatening and belligerent. So this was a small female officer, Jacqueline Piper, I think her name was. She testified in the trial. And she told him to get off, and he said, fuck off, my child just died, or something like that.
Yeah.
But he was pacing around the place screaming. He wasn't really assisting or, you know, he wasn't at the side of his child, which rubbed everyone the wrong way, I think.
Yeah, no, he wasn't.
Yeah.
He was walking to and fro.
Yes, right.
The police took Ross's phone and asked for his passcode. They asked Ross if he was normally the one who took Cooper to daycare. Ross said it was usually him, but sometimes Liana took him.
Yeah, now he was a little bit flighty about that, and I thought, that's a little strange. I think he's trying to make it sound like it wasn't his normal routine necessarily. He said we swap back and forth. But then later on, most people would say, yeah, he almost always dropped him off in the morning.
Right. Yeah. It's the routine.
Yeah, right.
So then police asked him about his relationship with Liana. Russ said that they had their ups and downs, as who doesn't, but they were happy and had a strong relationship.
Right. So which then, is really not true. We're going to find out that he was unfaithful.
Yeah. Well, I guess you can still feel like you have a strong relationship and be unfaithful.
I don't think so, because then you're not being honest with each other, right?
Well, yes.
Yes, I mean, you can...
But you can convince yourself that these little peccadilloes don't matter, and you have a good relationship with your spouse.
Okay, maybe if you're a man, you can do that.
Well, I don't know if it's confined to men.
I'm just kidding. It's not, I'm sure.
So police asked Russ how he thinks this could have happened. He said there were occasions when he dropped Cooper at daycare and then went to Chick-fil-A and then to work. So maybe his mind just thought that's what he was doing.
Okay.
Bullshit.
Yep.
Then Russ talked about how he had recently heard of a guy who did the same thing. He talked about a vet on YouTube who talked about how dangerous it is to leave your pet in a hot car. So he said that he is aware of this thing happening.
Yeah, so the fact that he was aware of it.
Is this like...
I don't know why he's talking about that. I mean...
Because he wants to portray it as an accidental thing.
Well, yes, yes. So he's talking about how he saw this video. I've seen the video. It's a vet in a hot car showing how hot it gets so quickly, not to leave your dog in the car.
It gets hot fast.
Yeah. He said a lot of things about being aware of it, right? He said, I didn't take a second look like I should have.
Yeah.
You know, so he did seem more aware of it than would seem typical, which was another red flag to police. So he's not doing very well with police.
No, they're suspicious of him.
Absolutely. So he was talking more about Cooper's car seat. They talked about how he had a forward-facing one, and then 2 weeks ago, he'd switched out this rear-facing one.
Well, yeah, that's the preferred method.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, forward-facing is dangerous, or potentially dangerous.
Yeah, but at 22 months, don't they start getting to the point where...
Nope.
No?
I mean, it used to be, and probably back in this time, that...
Only a couple years ago.
Well, it's not that recent.
Okay.
But it used to be that once you hit a year of age, you could swing the seat around and have it forward facing. But then they pretty quickly rescinded that and said, no, it's still better as long as the child hasn't gotten too big to have it rear facing because it's safer.
Yeah.
So that maybe that's what happened.
Well, and it would come up in the trial that maybe he was a little too big for the seat. Also, that would make him more visible if he was bigger. So that was an issue in the trial. So the way this seat was set up, you've got the two front seats of the car, and then right in the middle of the back seat, you have this rear-facing car seat for the child, which pretty much abuts the seats, right? It's right there.
Right.
So it's his head is like maybe a foot from where the baby's head would be.
Mm-hmm.
Very close. So that's another interesting thing. But the police did tell him that they were going to charge him with cruelty to a child. And they put him in a cell and went to interview Liana. Now, at this point, Ross said that this was completely unintentional. He talked to them about how it was an accident. He was distracted. He never would have done it on purpose. Police did allow Liana to come in and see him. And the video continued to roll as she went into the interview room with Ross.
So with Liana, Ross broke into tears and said he didn't mean for it to happen. Now, this is after he's been kind of pacing back and forth and not showing a huge amount of emotion anyway.
Not crying, for sure.
Right. Liana seemed pretty calm and told Ross that she knew he didn't do it on purpose. So she's acknowledging that it happened.
Yeah, now he's telling her his story just as he told police. And this whole thing's strange to me. I'm a mom. I don't care how much I love my husband. If he did that, I would be... ripping his head off. I'd be so furious.
Well,
I wouldn't be that forgiving right away like that.
At least a little more emotional.
Oh, geez. Right? A lot more emotional. You know,
she took it all kind of in stride.
Unbelievable. That's her baby. That's unbelievable. So that is very odd. And I know that people are different. So it might just be how she is.
Oh, possibly.
But she did seem like a cold fish towards her baby.
And Russ said to Liana, I was up and down, dreading he was going to look terrible.
So here's another thing police grabbed.
That's kind of a stupid, it's kind of an idiotic comment.
Okay, but devil's advocate, you look, you see that your child's been in the car all day. Oh, fuck. I went to work. I left him in the car all day. You pull over. You might be thinking in your head, he's going to be very dead. This is going to be horrible.
Okay.
He's going to look terrible.
He is, but that's not the thing that would come out of my mouth.
No.
That quickly.
And I would think as a parent, you're still going to have that hope, even if you knew. You're still going to have that hope, right? That's
right.
Just how it is to be a parent.
Yeah, and the other thing that people were surprised at was how calm Liana seemed.
Yeah.
She said to Russ, "Did you say too much?" Which
yeah.
I'm wondering what she meant by that, and I'm sure the prosecutors were wondering what the meaning of that was.
Yeah, there was some explanation when she testified, but I think we'll probably get to that. She did have kind of an explanation, but it did sound suspicious.
Oh, very.
Yeah, I mean, just the fact that she's showing this much concern for him and his legal predicament is odd to me. I wouldn't give a shit about that at this point.
No.
No.
I mean,
I'd be like, lock us both up. I just want my baby back.
Your almost 2-year-old was left in a car and died a horrible death.
You'd
be thinking that would be the primary focus.
You're going to think nothing else matters, right? But that's me. I mean, some people might be like this and not be criminal. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to convict them yet.
No, but it did make police wonder.
Yes.
Yeah. So later that night, Liana called Ross's cousin and her friend, Katie, saying that she was just staying out on her sidewalk. So she said that as long as she stayed outside, Cooper's death didn't seem real. Katie said that she wasn't surprised by Liana's calm and how forgiving she was of Ross, because that's how Liana was. That's her personality. She was strong and she was calm. She was the one that held things together, which I totally see that in the relationship. She was the one that was responsible in holding things together.
Yeah, he's the dorky guy.
He's like the big baby child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She has 2 kids.
Right. And I have friends like that, with husbands like that, and it's horrible. It's a bad position to be in.
Oh, good. So you're going to keep me for a while.
Well, yes, because you're a man and you are responsible.
Thanks.
It's very important. But there are situations like that, you know, with women and men, obviously.
That's for sure.
Yeah. So she did go in the house, and she said she did go into Cooper's room and cry. Now, she didn't have her baby or her husband. She called her mother, and her mother was actually very freaked out, much more emotional acting than Liana. And Liana actually said to her mother, I don't know why I can't cry. So I think there's an element of shock here that we should consider.
Okay.
You know, maybe she hadn't gotten to that point yet.
I'll give her that.
Okay. So what about Ross's behavior at the scene?
Well, that was pretty odd, or considered to be pretty odd.
Yeah.
Audio and video footage showed Ross yelling and being aggressive. He never asked to hold Cooper or to be with Cooper.
That was really odd.
Very odd.
Why would you leave your child's side?
He was handcuffed and put in the back of a cruiser. He didn't try to resuscitate Cooper or check on him, just running around yelling when he wasn't cuffed in the car.
Okay, so he did say that he knew he was gone.
Right.
So that's valid, but I still think you would do whatever you could until people got there.
Wouldn't
at least
you?
Hold him.
Sure.
Yeah.
So video footage from his visit to the Chick-fil-A seemed unremarkable, but workers at the restaurant said that Russ was introducing Cooper to them, almost like he was showing him off. The other thing that was noted on the video was that Cooper was wide awake while at the restaurant, so it wasn't like this kid was sound asleep on Ross's shoulder.
So how do you feel about that? Do you feel like a kid could be wide awake, eat his breakfast, get buckled in the car, and fall right to sleep?
I think it's tough. I mean, I guess it's possible. Look how quickly I can fall asleep.
Yeah, it's true.
But, yeah, I mean, he's taken this child out, they've had breakfast, and he gets buckled into his car seat, and he's driving for 2 minutes at tops.
Yeah.
To his office.
Right.
That's a little difficult.
It is. And I'm just thinking that's really quick to forget him, for one thing. And all of these little things are, well, this might be okay. Well, this might just be that. She might just be this. He might just be that. But they keep piling up is the problem.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, if you look at these as individual events, they might not amount to much, but
right.
If you take the accumulation of them,
yeah,
they start to add up.
So it's kind of a strong circumstantial case, they would say.
I would think so.
Yeah. Now, another issue with this distance was that the drive was 1/2 of a mile, and he would have had to forget Cooper within 2 minutes. So I saw that on the Dateline. Andrea, what's her name on Dateline, did a drive in the same car in the same area, and it took her less than 2 minutes to make the drive from the Chick-fil-A to Ross's office.
Yeah.
That's very quick to forget you have your baby in the car. You've just fed him and got him into the seat?
It is. And even if the baby fell asleep that quickly, which is to me a little difficult to understand.
Yes.
You haven't gotten far enough or long enough to think that the kid wasn't in the car with you.
But on the other hand, maybe he was very distracted.
Right? Could have been.
We have all these women he was sexting and stuff. That could be distracting.
Could be.
So there's this thing called forgotten baby syndrome, which is a real thing, I guess, where parents can forget their child.
Well.
Do you think it's a real thing?
It's a hypothetical thing.
Okay.
And there's some strong hypothetical evidence that it's a real thing.
So it's a working theory.
It's a theory in process.
Okay. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I hope I don't bore people.
Oh, you never bore me.
Well, that's
other people can fast forward if they
okay.
don't like it.
Get your fast forward fingers ready.
No, come on.
So this is going to talk about neuroanatomy and neurochemicals.
Okay.
So go to sleep now.
Just spice it up a little for us.
Okay, I'll try. So we're talking about how this forgotten baby syndrome occurs. There are two brain structures. One is called the hippocampus. The other is called the prefrontal cortex. And these work together to optimize decision-making and to form and retrieve new memories. So this is what happens when you're in a routine.
Okay.
These are active. There's two other brain structures, the amygdala and the basal ganglia. And they can interfere with the hippocampus prefrontal cortex memory system.
Now, how do they do that?
Well, it has two ways. So the basal ganglia can suppress the functioning of the hippocampus prefrontal cortex system in a predictable and safe situation. Say, as in driving a car to work, the basal ganglia can dominate the hippocampus prefrontal cortex system.
So wait a minute. So is this like when I'm in my car and I'm driving somewhere I drive all the time and I get there and I don't remember any of the drive?
Right.
Or like I'm going in a different direction than usual, but I'm used to going one way, so I go the way I'm used to?
You got it.
Okay. So that's why it's more likely to happen if it's not your routine, if it's
right.
a different thing.
So when the basal ganglia dominates memory processing, a person is less likely to interrupt habit-based behaviors to do something that is consciously planned. So I guess the way to put that is that if you always go from point A to point B, it's tough to interrupt that.
Sure. Right. I could see that. Because driving is kind of an automatic thing that you don't think a lot about when you do it every day.
Exactly.
It's like riding a bike.
Now, the second hypothesis concerns the amygdala, the other part of the brain.
Okay.
So the amygdala is activated under high stress conditions, and this will interfere with the hippocampus prefrontal cortex system, which results in a person becoming completely focused on a stressful event and causing the person to lose track of other information held in memory by the hippocampus prefrontal cortex system.
All right, give me a for instance of that.
So you're stressed. So you're driving to work or driving with your child in the back seat.
Yep.
And you're thinking about the text you just got from one of your hooker girlfriends.
Okay, so you're giving us an example that would be pertinent to Ross's.
I'm doing a specific example in this case.
Excellent.
And I have no idea whether that occurred while he was driving the child to the office.
But, right, right.
But, you know, he was involved with several women.
At least over the internet, yeah.
Right. So a stressful situation such as that could make him forget the other stuff.
Sure. So that reminds me of a woman I saw on Oprah once who had forgotten her child in the car, and she was devastated. And she was really busy, working full-time, 3 children, and it was some kind of special party that day where she was bringing in cupcakes.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd come in for that all stressed out and had left her little girl in the car.
Yeah.
So I think that's an example of it happening accidentally.
Sure, because the stressful situation interfered with the normal run of the day.
Right, right.
And that caused her to lose track of what she was supposed to be doing.
Right.
So those are the hypotheses, and I think they're reasonable.
Okay, so what about one thing that was brought up was that he had a picture of Cooper at his desk, that he had a gift from Cooper, like a drawing or something from his daycare, that he had texted his wife about Cooper that day. Now, would none of these things jog his memory?
No.
No, why not? Because he thinks he's done it? He thinks he's taken him to daycare.
I mean, as far as he knows, the day went as always.
Yeah.
He took him to daycare. So looking at his picture and hearing things about Cooper, that's the usual. It's not a deviation from normal.
Yeah, because he hasn't forgotten that he has a son.
Right.
He's just forgotten where he is, if that was the case.
Exactly.
So many parents have accidentally forgotten their children in the car before.
Well, we have over 700 in the past 19 years.
Right. So it's not a super common thing.
No, it isn't. But no. It does occur. It occurs about 35 times a year.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, but the people that you're talking about, those are only instances where the child died.
Right.
Right. Because there must be plenty of cases where they get into work and say, holy shit, Johnny's in the car.
God, I can't believe I left my kid in the car.
Right.
And out they go and boom.
And everything's okay if they do it soon. Yeah.
Yep.
Or it's a cold climate. You know, it's not a hot day.
Yeah.
Okay. So police did see this case as different, obviously, because they're handling it differently. So they considered the short distance between the Chick-fil-A and Ross's workplace. They considered the position of the car seat in the car, very close to him, his odd behavior, and the fact that he'd stopped by and dropped off the light bulbs in the car at lunchtime. So we haven't really talked about that yet. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, we saw in the video, the parking lot video.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure he looked actually into the car. He kind of tossed the light bulbs in.
Right.
And I can grant him that. Because if he's putting the light bulbs into the passenger side front seat, he wouldn't necessarily look at anything in the back.
Right. Maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible, I guess.
Yeah, but the thing that I think is more damning to Russ was that he backed his car when he arrived at Home Depot.
In the morning.
In the morning, he backed his car into his parking spot.
Right.
And by doing that, he had to be looking directly at the kid.
Unless he didn't look over his shoulder and he just used the rearview mirror. Possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm reading too much into that.
Well,
I have to look over my shoulder.
Yeah, and you should. That's the normal way to do it.
I can't do it just by rearview mirror.
Right.
And these days I have my car that will tell me how to do it, probably do it for me.
Another thing was that when he got there in the morning, they testified that it took him over 30 seconds from when he parked to when he went in. So he did spend a short amount of time in the car when he parked.
Yeah, so what's that about?
We don't know. So what was he doing there?
Yeah.
God, I mean, I just hope the kid wasn't wide awake and he was saying, I'll be right back or some horrible shit.
Yeah.
You know, that's horrifying to think.
Well, it's a 2-year-old.
If he did it on purpose.
You're going to tell the 2-year-old, I'll be right back. He doesn't know what you're talking about.
But still, if the baby was awake and he spoke to him and left him there, it's just horrifying.
Oh, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't know. For some reason, that seems like worse than if he was asleep, although I know either way, it's horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
What was also odd to me was that when he was interviewed by police, he didn't mention that he'd stopped by and thrown the light bulbs in at lunch.
Yeah.
So that was suspicious.
He neglected that one first.
Right.
Because that didn't reflect well on him.
Right. Well, another thing that came up is he and these two friends that went to lunch together every day, one of them had a pickup truck with only 2 seats, so they never had him drive. So it was either Ross or the other guy that drove each time.
Mm-hmm.
And Ross didn't drive. There's a 50-50 chance there.
Right.
That he either knew and purposely didn't drive, or it would just happen that he wasn't the one driving that day.
Yeah, it's an interesting fact.
Well, it's also interesting the fact that he went back to the car because police believed that this was a purposeful thing, like, you know, returning to the scene of a crime type of activity, which mm-hmm. people do, right?
Sure.
Now he could have been checking to see if he was dead.
Well, that's pretty cold, isn't it?
Well, the whole thing's cold. If he did this, it's horribly cold.
Yeah.
Right? It's dreadful. but he could have been going to check. So that's another thing. So this whole lunchtime put a lot of other factors into this that were questionable for me, made me suspicious of him.
Right.
If he'd mentioned it right away when he was interviewed,
that would have made been more a help, sense. Right.
Right. Exactly.
And then there's other things. Once they got going through his phone and computer records, he was really screwed because they discovered that he was very active in online sex chat rooms and sexting numerous women.
Yeah, and he also had sexted with a 15-year-old.
Yeah, that's great. Some of these sextings happened on the day Cooper died. Investigators concluded that Ross had wanted to be free of the responsibilities of fatherhood to such an extent that he decided to kill his child.
Now that's a huge leap for me.
It is a big leap.
Especially for a man, why don't you just leave?
Right.
Right?
Or why don't you just keep doing what you're doing?
Yeah, he seemed to have it pretty good.
Yeah.
There were some talk that they were having some financial problems, but it didn't seem major.
No.
No.
The computer, Russ's computer, also showed that he had done research on hot car death, although I guess that it turned out that he didn't really research it that much. It was just something that came up.
Yeah, he'd watched a video on YouTube. That's the only thing they could find.
Right.
So he had seen the video by the vet. And then this child-free life thing, they say that someone texted him the link and that he had responded grossness as his response, like he didn't like that idea.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, maybe that shouldn't be held against him at all.
Well, anyway, they decided to charge Russ with malice murder.
Yes.
And his trial began in October of last year, 2016.
Now, my issue with these sexting things is, oh, yeah, he's a scumbag. But I don't know if that has anything to do with...
I don't think it has anything to do with what
happened. I think
they
went way off track on that.
Well, I think they got to present that stuff to make him seem like a jerk.
And I agree, he is a jerk.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that he killed his kid.
No, but sometimes it seems like in court, they don't like you. Well, I kind of thought also, what if this had been a woman under the same circumstances?
Well, they'd probably go easier.
Well, at least in the beginning.
That's a sexist remark, isn't it?
Well, it seems like they do, though.
But I think that it'd be better to be a female than a male.
In this instance.
Situation.
Although I think if they found the sexting and stuff on a woman, they'd probably head the same direction once everything came out. But I'm just thinking, in the beginning, if a woman was freaking out and pacing, they wouldn't lock her in the car immediately.
I think
being a large male made him more of a threat.
I think so.
Made him more unlikable. So yeah, the trial began in October 2016, so that's a little over 2 years after the incident. Right? So he's been in jail for a while.
Yep.
And his wife has divorced him.
Over this time.
Yes.
Although she continues to support his innocence.
Yes, she doesn't believe that he killed Cooper.
Well, she doesn't believe he killed him intentionally.
Well, yes, that's what I mean. He was responsible for his death.
He certainly was responsible for his death.
Okay.
And nobody will deny that.
Right.
But she thinks that he's innocent of malice.
Right, that he didn't plan it and do it on purpose.
So my question then is, well, why do you divorce him?
Well, because of the infidelities and the lies in that.
Oh.
Yes.
So she didn't know about any of this.
No, I guess he did have a history of, like, looking at porn a lot, but no, she didn't know about this stuff.
So she didn't know that he was doing active sexting, and actually he had been with prostitutes, correct?
Oh, yes, he had, several times.
Yeah, I guess that would take care of that marriage.
Sure. So police officer Jacqueline Piper from Cobb County, was on patrol. And she responded to the call of a child not breathing. So she drove into the shopping center. And she testified that Ross sounded like he was fake crying. That he would make small talk and ask her about his job. And then he would scream like Will Ferrell, I think she even said. Like he was acting. Yeah.
Well, so that, you that's could a tell, good role model to act about.
I guess. But you could tell right away that she had a bad idea about him.
Yeah. And so, others did, too.
So I kind of feel like, wow, that's really judgy to come to a site like that.
Well, not just her, though. Other bystanders thought the same thing.
Yeah, so maybe they're right. But it did seem kind of judgy.
Yeah.
So he's in the back.
And maybe that didn't come out right away, you know?
Well, maybe, but when she was talking about it, she was talking like he was an asshole from the beginning.
Yeah.
She didn't like him.
No, she took an immediate dislike for him.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But so, other people that were there didn't think he was that great either.
No. Everyone thought he was acting bizarre.
Yeah.
And the fact that he walked away from the kid, nobody liked that.
Well, I wouldn't.
No. So he had asked her about her job and made some small talk, and then he made this complaint that the police car was too hot, which you can see how that would go over.
Yeah, no kidding.
That was...
You just cooked your child, and you're complaining about the police car being too hot?
Yeah. Which she said she had the air on, so, you know, he does seem like a whiny bitch.
He does.
Doesn't he? Yeah.
Yes, he does.
Okay. So the prosecution showed her dash cam when she drove up to the site, and you can see Ross pacing back and forth with his hands on his head, screaming, you know, my wife's going to kill me, oh my God, my boy, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which all seems okay to me, but the whole walking away from him and pacing.
Kind of okay.
And my wife's going to kill me, that seems weird.
Right.
Yeah. So the men that were working at the shopping center where Ross pulled in and took Cooper out of the car and put him on the pavement, they testified that they helped and they attempted CPR. And they gave their opinion on Ross's reaction, which they didn't think it was right either, because they were attempting CPR until the ambulance got there or the police got there.
Right.
They didn't stop, even though they said it seemed like he was definitely gone.
Yeah, he was gone.
He was gone for hours.
But Ross didn't help with the CPR.
No.
So he left it to the bystanders.
Yeah, which seems odd.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Detectives testified about searches that they were able to find on Ross's computer. They didn't find any files on search words murder, child, or car deaths.
Yeah, so this whole idea that he researched hot car deaths kind of went by the wayside. That
right.
Didn't really seem like a thing.
It didn't sound like it was going to stand up.
No.
But then we get into the sexting and the prostitutes and stuff.
Yeah, which looks really bad.
Really bad. So there was an escort that testified that she advertised on a website called Backpage. Ross had met her 3 times in May 2014 at an Econo Lodge. So
for sex.
For sex. And then they reviewed his behavior at the scene, including how he complained that the back seat in the cruiser was too hot as he sat there handcuffed following Cooper's death. Now we had a string of women, not just one.
No, several.
Several. Took the stand to say that they had sexted with Ross or had sexual encounters with him. He had communicated with 6 different women on the day Cooper died. So I guess that would categorize the stressful situation.
I don't know. Is that stress or is that distraction? It's not necessarily stressful. He's enjoying it.
Yeah, but it's still...
It's a distraction. I don't know if I'd call it stress.
I would.
Because he doesn't need to do it. He can put the phone down.
Yeah, but I think that's a deviation from the routine.
It might be his routine, though.
And it's, well, okay.
It's kind of his routine, let's be honest.
I think it's a stressful situation.
Well, okay.
So he had communicated with all these women on the day Cooper died. After strapping Cooper into his car seat, Ross had messaged a woman on Whisper, "I love my son and all, but we both need escapes." Prosecution made big stuff out of that.
Yeah, which I didn't really go too much for, because that just sounds like escapes, like you need to go out with your friends and stuff, or
yeah.
Go out and cheat.
I mean, that by itself
that doesn't
isn't
sound like
terribly
you're
damning.
Doesn't sound like you're going to kill your son. Now, there were some things he said that I found more disturbing, like there was one comment he made to a woman about how he felt trapped in his marriage and he had nothing to show for it. I thought that was much more damning. But that's just me. The prosecution made more of this. Now, in the trial, it was also revealed that Cooper had a scratch on his face and abrasions on the back of his head. So maybe now you could go over the coroner report.
Well, basically, the coroner report said that the child had died of hyperthermia. So he had breakdown of his internal organs.
Yes.
Now, the abrasions that were described were probably described or explained by the poor little kid thrashing around in his car seat.
So, do you think he had seizures?
Maybe seizures, but he was trying to escape or trying to get out, and he was thrashing his head back and forth.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That's awful.
Isn't it?
What about the scratch on his face, just being agitated and upset?
Yeah.
So there was no sign of long-term child abuse?
No.
No old bruises or old broken bones or anything?
There weren't any of that.
Okay. So the defense team said the entire case against him had been twisted by prosecutors to make Ross look like a monster. A computer expert testified that Ross had never actually searched for information on hot car deaths. He had clicked on the one YouTube video about the dangers of leaving a pet in the hot car. So the defense said that Ross hadn't even looked into the car when he threw the light bulbs in, because according to the video and his defense attorneys, his head never went below the level of the roof. Friends and colleagues testified that Ross was really a very good dad. Even the women that Ross sexted with testified that Ross always spoke with love about his son and seemed to be a caring father.
Well, give me a fucking break.
Whoops, Jesus. What?
So his fuck buddies.
Yeah.
Said he's a good dad.
Yeah.
I'm not going to believe that for a second.
Okay. Why? Because he's cheating on his wife? He can't be a good dad?
No.
Okay.
He can't.
All right. You're harsher than I am.
Well, I mean, how do they know what kind of a dad he is?
Well, okay. They don't know. His friends, though, some friends and family said that he was a really good dad, not just the women.
Well, the women have no idea
Sure. What
kind of a father he is, so I'm just going to totally discount their testimony.
Well, I think the defense's attempt here was to show that he didn't say, oh, I hate having a kid and I want to get rid of him. He didn't say anything like that.
Well, I'm not sure he said anything. I mean, he's just there to have sex with these women.
Well, the sexting, he had to say stuff.
And he's going to talk about his kid?
Well, he did. With some of them, yeah. There were some of them that he would say he was in love with and, you know, sing them songs and all this bullshit.
Yeah.
So they weren't all just pure sex. There was some okay. Romance. Air quotes, romance.
Give me a break. Okay. That just doesn't work.
So that doesn't work for you?
Not in the least.
Okay. Liana testified for the defense, even though she had divorced him. Although she believed that Ross had destroyed her life by cheating, she said that he was a good dad to Cooper. So she'd never seen Ross show anger or malice toward Cooper, she said. She did testify also that he could be forgetful. In regard to Ross's interrogation, she testified that that was just his personality, was to make small talk. And when he fell down crying in her arms, she believed that that was his genuine grief, which he could only reveal to her.
Uh-huh.
So she's an odd
person. I'm really buying that.
How do you feel about her?
Well, I'm thinking at best she's just kind of ignorant, or at worst she was complicit in this.
Well, I don't know. I don't think she was complicit, but I'm telling you that I have this feeling about her like she loved him more than her baby.
Okay.
Right? That's, she seemed more concerned about him.
That's not a bad thought.
So, which I don't like that. Complicit, I don't know. Well, I don't really think she was complicit. She okay. was odd. She was cold.
She not the, as, the thing that makes me think that is what she said to him in the interrogation room. Did you say too much?
Right.
So, and I can see your thoughts, too, that he was the baby.
Yeah.
And she was taking care of him.
It seemed that way
still,
to me.
I just didn't like that comment by her.
No, and nobody did. But she did seem to be the caretaker of him, like she was worried about him.
That's true.
Which, to me, a mother should always pick her child first. So that didn't seem good with me.
Right.
But I can kind of see that it seemed like she was the boss, she was the caretaker, you know, whatever. She was weird.
She was.
So she testified that she'd known for years about Ross's problems with online pornography, and she'd offered to give him a divorce if he wanted to be free and be with other women, but he said that he wanted to stay with her and Cooper. So I don't know what to make of that exactly.
Well, that means he wants to continue being married and still being able to do what he's doing.
Well, then why would he kill his child?
Because it got to be the point where he had to decide what to do.
But he could have divorced her.
Yeah, but who does that?
So are you thoroughly convinced that he did this on purpose?
Not 100%.
No.
But I think there's enough evidence that suggests that he did it on purpose.
Okay. Well, on cross-examination, the prosecution pointed out that Ross had lied to her all the time. He had sexted with a teenager. There was actually a 15-year-old and an 18-year-old. And he'd had the sexual encounters with prostitutes. And she was cross-examined for 2 days, which was a humiliating experience, but she did hold to her belief that Cooper's death was an accident. Now, one thing that was irritating about her testimony was she seemed more upset to me about the cheating than about the fact that he'd killed her son.
Right.
That was terrible.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I don't know if she's just a demented person. What did you think about that?
Well, I think her priorities are screwed up.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I mean, if we're looking at it as Ross is the real baby of the family.
Right.
Then I can kind of understand those actions.
Sure. So Ross was found guilty on all counts, including malice murder, cruelty to a child, sexual exploitation of children, and that's for texting with the 15-year-old.
Yeah.
And the dissemination of harmful material to a child. So when we're talking about sexting, we might not have been very clear. He did send pictures of his penis.
Right.
And he requested pictures of the women's genitals as well.
Yeah.
So this was not just flirting.
No, this was a little bit more.
Yep. So the defense team believes that the verdict will make life more difficult for parents who accidentally leave their child in a hot car. Now, when you were talking about that, you said that a lot of them did get charged, even if it was an accident.
Right.
Right.
But they weren't charged with murder.
No. They were charged with what?
They were charged with child abuse or endangerment to a child.
Yeah.
And the most of the things I read, they were acquitted.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay. So is there a difference when it wasn't the parent, but it was a babysitter or some other caretaker?
Yes, because they were supposed to be caretaking. So when they were charged, there was a 90-something percent conviction rate.
Wow.
Yeah.
Of child abuse, but not murder. This
right.
was the first one where it's been malice
murder. This was the
murder.
Only one that was murder.
Okay. Okay, well, I'm not sure if they totally convinced me that he did it, but I don't like him. He's a jerk.
Nobody likes him.
And
but you know what?
What?
We've had a few convictions where we think that the jury convicted the person on the basis of just not liking him, just being a shit of a person.
Right. Yep.
In fact, most recently, the Bella Bond case.
Right.
We're convinced, or at least I'm convinced, that they convicted him.
Let's not talk about that too much, because only the members hear that.
Okay.
So it's not something that most
Scratch
people have
that.
Heard.
But
yeah.
There's instances where if you're unfavorable to the jury, you're more likely to be convicted.
I think so, yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So, kiddies, the lesson is be nice to the jury and get acquitted.
Right. Well, he'd have to do more than be nice. I mean, he'd already made his bet. No pun intended. Okay. Now, before we wind down and get to feedback, I'd just like to do a little self-promotion.
Well, I think that's always a good idea.
Yep.
I mean, we want to tell people what's coming up and have them looking forward to things.
Right. So we have a website, tiegrabber.com, and if you go there, you can join Team Tiegrabber and get some exclusive content just for members only. You can join for $2 a month, $3 a month, or $5 a month. We'll send you a gift, and you'll be a member. And we've done... How many have we done now? We started in March, so I think we have five.
Five or six.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we got the O.J. Simpson series coming up. We're doing a four-parter on the O.J. Simpson case, the murders of Ron Goldman and Nicole Brown. Also, another way to support us is to shop for some of our merch at Shop the Brewery on our website. We have some cool stuff there. We have great t-shirts. We have snifters. We have our new credit card-sized bottle openers. And we have, of course, the classic True Crime Brewery sticker, which is great for your back window of your car, your favorite keg, your laptop. Nice little sticker.
It's very cute.
Yep. Also, you can follow us on Instagram or Twitter at Tiegrabber Pods. We're also on Facebook, and we actually have a Facebook True Crime Brewery fan discussion page now that was started by one of our devoted listeners. I think it's really an awesome thing to go out there and start a page for us.
I do, too.
She did it on her own. And
I'm pretty humbled.
Yeah, and people are joining, so that's super neat.
It is.
Yeah. So check that out. We can discuss old cases. We can discuss cases that are coming up. Cases we might never do, but they're just fun to talk about. So that's a great thing to check out. Also, we're always happy to get 5-star reviews on iTunes. That helps us get the word out that we could be fun to listen to. That's a nice way to get the word out of what we're like and that some more people might like to listen to us.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. All right. Well, how about I play a little soft music and we segue into our feedback?
Let's feedback.
All right.
Welcome to feedback.
Welcome.
We're going to go for a few minutes here.
And it's your turn, so you can start.
I get to go first.
What have you got for us?
I have a Facebook message from Sue. Hi, Dick and Jill. Every time I start to listen, I'm reminded of my first grade reading books, Dick and Jane.
Yeah, well, I had those.
I remember those, too.
Yeah.
So, Sue, I think you're showing yourself to be of a certain age.
Fun with Dick and Jane. That was a great movie, too.
Yeah.
The original with George Segal and Jane Fonda.
That was a little different than Dick and Jane.
Yes, but that was the name of it, and they had the book at the beginning.
Don't know if you ever heard of them. Oh, yes. Anyway, I love the beer reviews, but how do you get all those beers? Do you have to order them? Here in Pennsylvania, we have beer distributors that only sell the commercial beers. Even the taverns don't sell more exotic beers. Help. Love the podcast. I like to use my headphones while I work in the house or yard, and I used to put on, well, listen to crime shows on YouTube. But yours is so much better to listen to. They remind me of my old books on tape. Great, great, great job. That pretty much says it. So, Sue, I get beers from people that I do trades with.
Trading is a big thing.
That's probably my primary source.
So how do you make these connections with other beer drinkers across the country, though, if you don't really have that yet?
Well, I'm on a website that...
There are a couple different ones, right?
There's a couple different ones, and I'm on one that I've gotten to be friends with a bunch of people, and we're always sending beers back and forth. So that's one way.
Yeah.
And then there's a bunch of commercial sites, websites, that you can order beer from.
But you have a pretty good local store where you get a fair amount of them, too.
I do, but it's more local stuff.
Yeah.
So if you want some of the exotic ones, either you got to be friends with somebody from that state.
Yes.
You look up the website, a particular website, where you can expect to pay premium money.
Well, shipping
to get your beer.
Shipping it costs a lot.
Shipping costs a lot, and they jack the price up like crazy, especially for the popular ones.
Absolutely.
So, but there are ways to get the beers.
Okay. All right. Well, I have a Facebook message from Julie, which is a suggestion for a case. So she says that, first of all, I love the podcast. I work in a factory and y'all help me through a lot of 11-hour days. So thank you. Well, you're welcome. There's a case that is close to home for me that I would love for y'all to cover. The victim is 12-year-old Shonda Scherer. This case did get national attention due to the unbelievable circumstances. She was killed by 4 teenage girls after being tortured throughout the night. There are 2 books written about it, so she suggests a book for me, and she says that this case has stayed with her for over 20 years. So she says, I hope y'all will consider doing it. So this was a 1992 murder, and there was quite a bit of publicity on it. I looked it up on the internet, of course, and it might be worth doing. It's sad, okay. Reminds me a little bit of Sylvia, but it's more modern, of course.
But still, same kind of situation.
Well, I've already been going over, well, what would I title it? Probably Mean Girls, right? That would be the, that would probably be it. Okay. Well, thanks, Julie.
And I have another Facebook message from Liana, who says, Michigander here.
All right.
All right, she says. Another case from near me is Ricky Holland. It's a terrible story about a 7 or 8 year old that was murdered by his adoptive parents. So this is about a 7 year old who was found dead in a ditch in 2006, and his adoptive parents said he had run away. So I'm immediately suspicious of a 7 year old running away.
Well, of course.
But anyway, so this looks like a case that would be a good thing to investigate and maybe do.
Sounds like an incredibly sad case because I believe he had old injuries, so he had been being beaten.
Yeah, he was an abused kid.
So he was already, there was some kind of abandonment or issues with his original parents.
Right.
Then he went to these foster parents who adopted him.
These adoptive parents who treated him probably worse.
So he just had a shitty life, and
he did.
That's incredibly sad.
Yep.
Okay, but we'll consider it.
We should.
Okay. I have another suggestion from Kate331. I live in Oil City, Pennsylvania, and I would really love to hear your ideas on the Shauna Howe case that still haunts us to this day. I walk the bridge all the time she was thrown from. I hope you will consider this. We weren't allowed to trick-or-treat in the dark or without an adult my entire childhood. So this is a 1992 murder, and trick-or-treat was actually prohibited by the city council after this happened. And this is a little bit lesser-known case than the Shonda Scherer case, but there is a fair amount out there, so it's definitely worth adding to our list. So thank you for your suggestion, Kate331.
Good idea. We'll look into that.
Yeah.
I have another Facebook message from Kendra, who says, I always like to put a face to the episode involved in all these tragic stories. So today, after I listened to the episode about Isla Reynolds, I looked online and there happened to be an update regarding the case. Thought your listeners might be interested. I also have to tell you both that while I was listening to another episode, at the end you read comments from listeners. I heard Dick read a post I had made on Facebook.
So she's a two-timer already.
Yeah, see?
Way to go, Kendra.
It was really cool, and I could hardly wait to make my best friend listen to it. Keep up the good work. So for those of you who don't remember or don't know, Isla Reynolds was a 20-month-old who disappeared from her father and father's girlfriend's house in December of 2011.
Yeah, this is in Maine.
This is in Maine.
The biggest investigation in Maine history.
Right. Police determined that Isla couldn't have left on her own. The mother's side of the family is planning a civil suit, but they need to have her officially declared dead first, and police are continuing to follow up leads. So she hasn't been declared dead.
No, but police do believe she's dead.
Yeah.
If you'll remember, there was a large amount of her blood in the basement.
Right.
Right.
Not just a drop.
No. And there was a lot of suspicion of the adults that were in the house that night were very evasive.
Yeah. Well, I think the consensus is that the father was involved.
Yeah, and I think what we said on that episode is that it's really going to take someone to confess or spill the beans.
Someone's got to rat out the other person.
And I'm surprised that hasn't happened. I think usually someone breaks down.
They haven't yet.
No. Well, and I'm surprised the mother's doing the case, though, because I remember the mother continuing to be friendly with him, right?
Right.
So that was odd.
Up to a point.
Yeah, and this was a case where the mother wasn't, like, the greatest mother either. There were a lot of issues.
Definitely.
Right?
Yep.
There were some socioeconomic considerations. Okay, well, that's something we'll have to keep an eye on. It would be good to find out what happened to her. Poor little girl. Remember, she had a broken arm, so she was probably getting abused for a while.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about that.
Yeah, so sad. So I have a message from YouTube from Michelle Lee, and she makes a suggestion. So Michelle wrote, I'm sometimes shocked that some people don't just drown in their own stupidity. Murder is so vile. I do, however, love your channel. I listen in the mornings while getting ready for work and finish listening in the evening before bed. All the information is really well researched, and in many of these cases, I find our views and opinions are similar. I've been reading and watching true crime cases for many, many years, The social and psychological behaviors that drive someone to commit these crimes is really fascinating, but it always leaves me feeling heartbroken for the victims and for the families. There's a very recent case that you may find interesting, that of Dee Dee Blanchard and her daughter Gypsy. HBO aired a special on it called Mommy, Dead, and Dearest, and it is mind-blowing. And in my humble opinion, Gypsy should be in a mental hospital and not a prison. This girl needs lifelong mental care. Anyway, I would love to hear both of your opinions on this case one day. Thank you.
Well, we've already kind of looked at that, haven't we?
I watched it, yeah.
It's a fascinating case.
It's a Munchausen.
Yeah.
Yeah, the mom was just really did a huge number on the girl. It was Munchausen, but she had her not even walking. She had her in a wheelchair, even though she was able to walk.
Yeah.
So this girl was really, her mind was really messed up by her mother.
Totally.
Really is.
She was claimed to have cancer and stuff. It is just an amazing thing.
It might be worth looking into more because it's very complex.
Yeah.
And I don't think the HBO special really covered a lot. It's 1 hour, 1 hour and a half. How much can they really cover?
Well, I don't think they really did it justice.
No, they didn't. It was more focused on what Gypsy did later than it was focused on this lifelong, what the mother was doing to her throughout her life. I mean, it did touch upon it, of course. It was a big part of it, but it didn't really go into the detail. So, yeah, that one I think we should really look into.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah. And then I have an email from George in Connecticut, and it's about our recent episode, Twisted, the IHOP murders. Hi, Jill and Dick. Your latest episode, Twisted, was excellent. In the episode, Jill seems like she is trying to make excuses for Dee. I think you have difficulty believing that people really do these crimes, Jill, which is kind of funny considering all the crime research you do.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that's correct.
No?
No.
Okay, I think
I mean, I don't think you're soft on criminals.
No, but I think I give people the benefit of the doubt.
Well, maybe.
Which might not be a flaw.
But you didn't necessarily come down on Dee's side.
No, well, when she did that to the mother, I was off her side.
Well, that was the killer.
Yeah, that was cinched it for me. Yeah. Okay, but anyway, George goes on to say, but I really enjoy that because it accurately represents how many listeners feel. As caring citizens of the world, we can find a lot of these crimes unimaginable. So don't ever change. I think your innocence and friendship as a couple are charming aspects of the show.
Well,
so it turns out being a compliment, and I feel silly for reading it, but that's really nice, George. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, George.
But I think you're right. I think normal, caring people can find a lot of this shocking and hard to believe because it doesn't make sense. Like we said with that episode, murder is just stupid.
No kidding.
Right?
Yeah.
Yep.
So then we have an email from Jane in New Mexico, one of our favorite states.
New Mexico is so much fun. Well, we've only really been to Albuquerque and
Santa Fe.
But yeah, I love it there.
Haven't explored too much.
I love it, though.
So this is also about Twisted. My feeling about Dee Castile is that she was more involved than she said. No one is that gullible, especially an intelligent person who's been around the block a few times like Dee.
Good point.
Exactly. Love or infatuation can make us do crazy things. Also, as an alcoholic who hasn't had a drink in 7 years, I know that alcoholics can live life in a fog. While listening to the episode, I was actually yelling at her as she made the deal for Art's death, but I really jumped off the D train when she did what she did to poor old Bessie.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty unanimous thing. That was so cruel. Bessie was helpless and trusted Dee. Yeah, I mean, she kind of prepared her last meal. Isn't that horrible?
Yeah, she ordered her the food, and yeah, it was terrible. And Jane, by the way, congratulations on 7 years without drinking. That's quite an accomplishment.
You bet. And as for the two thugs who did the actual murders, they seem like mindless, violent souls. Alan, who started the whole thing, was a narcissistic coward. What a shitty bunch. Good description.
Yeah.
Twisted was the perfect title.
True. Was very twisted. I don't know what to think about the guys that actually did it. What do you think about those guys that actually did it? She says they seem like mindless, violent souls.
I think that's a correct assessment.
You think they didn't really think about it?
No.
So maybe they were just stupid? I mean, I hate to just label people.
I think they're really stupid.
Yeah.
And I think that at least the one guy, Mike.
Yeah, the one who took the money?
Yeah. Might have been more naive than the other guy who did the killings.
Yeah.
Or allegedly did the killings, but still.
Well, I kind of felt like Mike was trying to impress Dee. I think he had a thing for Dee.
Yeah. No, I think he did.
And so he thought this was going to impress her. Yeah. Just like she was trying to please Alan, and then Mike was trying to please her. It right. is a shitty group of people.
It surely
it's
is.
It's just like the perfect shitstorm.
Yeah.
Okay. So I have one more email from Joni in New York, and it's also about Twisted, the IHOP murders.
I guess that was a popular episode.
Yeah, and I like to get the recent feedback because it's still fresh in my mind.
Yeah. I can remember it better.
I don't have to go back and listen to an old episode. So Joni says, does anyone else think that Alan and Dee were actually having sex? I think that's how Alan got Dee to do whatever he wanted. She thought they would be together. I know he was gay, but sexuality has many shades, and he was manipulating enough to begin an affair with her. My heart really went out to Dee's kids, who seemed to care for her. Not only did she abandon them with her actions, but she disappointed them and chose spending time with Alan over spending time with them. Dee was a sympathetic character to me, as we learned about her early years, but I had no empathy for her after she helped hide Art's body. And when she set up that poor old woman, I wanted to scream. I think a lot of people were.
We all did.
Really disgusted with that.
You can sort of see her working with Alan to kill his lover.
Can you?
Well, I can. To a degree. But, I mean, the killing of that mother, Bessie, that's awful. Just gratuitous. And it's just horrifying.
Well, and this, I think she points out a good fact about she had these kids that cared about her and were pretty good kids considering the childhood they had.
Right.
And she would leave them alone to go out with this Alan asshole.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the more I think about Dee, the less I like her.
Yeah, we don't like her very much.
No, but I think she was kind of put in a sympathetic light in the articles and that book we read. In the beginning, at least.
Maybe.
Like a victim of circumstance, yeah. But she clearly made some horrible decisions.
She made some really poor decisions.
So what do you think about Joni's idea that Alan and Dee were actually having an affair?
I don't think it was a physical affair.
No.
No. And I know that sexuality has different boundaries or takes or whatever.
Yeah.
But I can't see them having sex.
Do you think that's what Dee wanted, though?
Yes.
Yes. And she thought that that would happen?
Maybe.
Did she think that if she did whatever Alan wanted, they'd end up to be together?
Yes.
Wow.
These are my succinct answers, huh?
Yeah. But, I mean, of all the people, the one I'd really like to analyze, I guess, would be Alan. Because what a monster, really, right?
Oh, yeah.
He's a monster.
He's truly a monster.
Yeah. Just wreaking havoc on anyone who meets him, really. And when Dee helped set up that murder, that was bad enough. But like she said, when Dee went back and helped to hide that body, to me, that's a whole other world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was an idea, which is still awful. But then to actually see that in person, and this was a guy she knew who was kind to her. Art was a kind man to her.
He was.
And she's helping clean up all that blood and mess. That just makes me think that she's a bad person.
She's not a good person, that's for sure.
Right. Just, what did Jane say? A shitty bunch, I like that.
She got that to a T.
That would be a good title for that episode, Shitty Bunch.
Let's rename it.
We could put them in the squares like the Brady Bunch, put their faces in it.
The Shitty Bunch.
The Shitty Bunch. That'd be great. Okay, that's all I have for feedback. I know you want to get going, so we'll wrap up this podcast.
Let's finish it off because the dogs are starting to bark. So anybody that might hear that in the background, we apologize.
Wow, Sophie is pissed.
Yeah.
All right, we got to end it.
Okay.
Jesus. Okay, goodbye. We'll see you at the quiet end.
Next time. Take care.